Work, work, work. I don't know about you, but sometimes life can seem like it's nothing but work. It also seems sometimes like my husband is doing nothing but working. And when that happens, I can feel the strain on our relationship. You know what I mean. I know a lot of wives and spouses know what I mean, especially the wife that wrote to me about this. And we're going to talk about her dilemma, which is probably very similar to yours, today in the Wife Savers Podcast.
Bags are packed. Are you ready to go? This time tomorrow we'll be on the road. Riding with you in the sunnier days. I wouldn't want it any other way.
Welcome to the Wife Savers Podcast, where multi-award-winning author and global marriage educator Ramona Zabriskie provides answers to your real wife questions. Our goal is to help you appreciate your womanhood, prioritize your personal development, and craft a powerful partnership with the man in your life. Hi, I'm Hannah Allen, and I'm proud to introduce my parents, Ramona and Dale Zabriskie. And yes, this is how they talk all the time. Let's listen. Taking the good with
the ups and downs. Hi ho, hi ho, it's off to work we go. There, how's that? Something you weren't expecting.
I can't believe you did that. That's actually a very clever intro.
You like that?
Well, yeah, I guess.
What key was that? That was in the key of R.
Yes, it was. It was inspiring, for sure. I'm instantly thinking about those hardworking dwarfs.
Yes, the eighth dwarf, the one that Disney rejected.
The eighth dwarf.
Tortellini was his name. So.
That was Dale Zabriskie, everyone, who is usually introducing himself, at least before he gets so silly. And he's my husband of 43 years. And I'm Ramona Zabriskie, the wife of a very hardworking man who did for decades throw a shovel over his shoulder and march out the front door.
Singing.
And, well, I don't remember that part, but.
Yes. And obviously that's a good thing from what you heard at the outset.
We're obviously talking today about work and maybe a little too much.
Yeah. Can you get
it?
Can you work too much?
Well, we're going to find out. Let me read you the throw me a wife saver question that we're going to base the rest of this conversation on. You ready?
I'm ready.
Please. I always worry about the ones that start with please. Please throw me a wife saver, Ramona. I don't have a good solution. Basically, my husband works too hard.
Well, get in line.
He's gone early in the morning and gets home late every night. I know he's on his quest and wants to be financially independent, pay off the house, etc., while we're still relatively young. Mm-hmm. So I've tried to be supportive, but when he can barely find an hour to spend with me once a week as a date night, and hardly gets to be with the kids, I can't help feeling sad and a little insecure, honestly. We've talked about it many times. He's even said, I like my job. There's just too much of it.
That's right.
But whenever he agrees to try and make things better, it doesn't last more than a week or two. And then he's right back to work. Help! I don't want to turn into a crazy lady, whining, nagging, etc.
Well, she is not alone.
No, she's not.
Right?
That's no. And obviously, that's why we do these podcasts,
yeah,
because we think they're going to apply to a lot of people. And having worked with so many women for so many years, I can tell you I've heard this so many times. Now, that being said, this can be flipped.
Yes.
You can have
right.
a spouse that is either husband or wife who the other spouse feels just works too much.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to
mm-hmm.
say work hard. I'm going to say works too much in that they're spending so much time or their focus is so much on the work that the other spouse is sensing that it's affecting the relationship.
Yeah, well,
right?
there's some indicators here in the question about the the reasoning or the rationale that exists in his mind about why, which puts it up there as far as the value of spending that time.
Okay, that's a really good point, and I really want to go into that. In fact, I want to really explore the why, and I'm hoping that you have a lot to help us understand that. I want to explore the why, and I want to then talk about the dangers involved in being a little overcommitted to work, if we could put it that way. I'm not sure. And then I want to obviously talk about solutions for both of them. Okay?
Great.
But the idea of the why is really important. We always go into the why before we go into the solutions. And interestingly, I just happened to be listening to the Broadway channel on the, what is it called, Siri?
The Sonos?
No, it was in the car.
It was in the car, so yeah, the Sirius XM Broadway channel.
Once in a while, I can tolerate
number 73, I think it is.
There you go. And they played, they were playing a whole theme show of Breaking Up. That was the theme, Breaking Up.
A lot of that in musicals.
There was a ton more than I realized. Anyway, one of the songs was from the show Sunday in the Park with George. Remember Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters? Anyway, there's a song in there called We Don't Belong Together, Stephen Sondheim. And I gave you the lyrics. See them there?
I got them.
Okay. I want you to read what George sings. You don't have to sing it.
I don't have
it.
To be Mandy Patinkin.
Hi-ho, hi-ho was enough.
Yeah, that's right. It's all downhill from here, folks.
Just, you know, again, this is supposed to be sung. But listen for the why in here. And listen, I'm going to tell you what I hear from her point of view after we go through this. And then I want you to tell me what you hear in his point of view.
Okay.
This will help us get to the why. Okay? So George starts. He says,
then there's nothing I can say, is there?
Yes, George, there is. You could tell me not to go. Say it to me. Tell me not to go. Tell me that you're hurt. Tell me you're relieved. Tell me that you're bored. Anything, but don't assume I know. Tell me what you feel.
What I feel? You know exactly how I feel. Why do you insist? You must hear the words. When you know I cannot give you words, not the ones you need, there's nothing to say. I cannot be what you want.
What do you want, George?
I need you, and you left.
There was no room for me.
You will not accept who I am. I am what I do, which you knew, which you always knew, which I thought you were a part of.
Wow.
End scene.
Wow.
Yeah, isn't that, I mean, that just speaks to so many situations and
well,
couples.
Let me tell you how I see what she's saying in there. And our letter writer, what our letter writer is saying. Okay, so she, what I hear is, and I relate to, honestly, from my own experience, is that she is stressed. She's lonely. She's irritated, obviously. She's frustrated. And I hear a little bit of hopelessness in there. Mm-hmm. Like in Dot, in these lyrics, she's leaving George. She's basically
she's up to that point.
Given up on him. Right. And why is she feeling all this? Because he's habitually maybe going in extra early, like she's the letter writer said, staying late at work, you know, staying way past the time you would normally expect him to be coming home. Maybe he's bringing work home. Maybe he's working on the weekends. And it feels like, at that point, it feels like to a spouse. And again, we could flip this. You know, it could go just the other way. So it feels like to the spouse that he's saying, through his actions, I am choosing to go to work rather than be with you. Other people's needs and expectations of me are more important than yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like to her. Okay, so because of that, she's losing confidence in her desirability. She doesn't feel desired by him. He's not, his actions are saying that, you know.
So, for him, this is really common. I think the one seminal statement here is, I am what I do.
Oh, right. Yes. And what did he say about that?
Well, he says, you knew this. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do.
Right.
And so, you know, earlier he says, you've got to hear me. You're not listening to me. I've said this. And she's going, how do you feel about it?
She wants words. She wants him to explain.
Right.
And he's like, I can't.
I can't. Right. I can't do that because
I'm showing you.
Right. I'm showing you this is what I am. This is who I am.
And I'm showing you by my work how I feel.
That's right.
About you and our family. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's every man. It really is every man.
Really?
I think so. You know, going back to, if we're really going to do an old cultural reference, it's Popeye the Sailor, who was, I am what I am. You know, I am what I am. Y-A-M. It is. It really
I teach my Y Savers course in community students that very thing, that a man is what he does.
Yeah, it's very
in
important.
His mind.
And one of the things you've always talked about, when two men meet, they've never met before, you know, they find out what their names are. And then the next question is, what do you do?
What do you
right?
do?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. What do you do? Okay, well, let's talk a little bit now about what qualifies as overworking.
Yeah, well,
because, you know,
the definition changes depending on who you're talking to.
Exactly. Yeah. He right. doesn't think he's necessarily overworking. Maybe right. he does. Like the letter writer said, her husband said, I like my job. There's just too much of it.
Well, and that's a real point that I think applies to a lot of this for a guy today, especially. And I know you've talked about how the roles could be reversed. But we're really talking about a woman whose husband
we're
is
we're trying to
in
specifically answer the wife, right?
And I think that there's so much pressure that exists to succeed because the work today, there's no pensions anymore, right? There used to be you go to work and you paid a little bit of money into the pension and that you knew that you'd retire after 20 years or whatever. There would be money there.
Yeah.
That doesn't work that way anymore. And so much of the business and the work today is driven by the valuation of a company and stock options or stock units that you have or going public. There's so much of this activity that guys, in this case, men are involved in to make money. That's how they're going to make the money.
Yeah.
And so they're like, I got to do this. I have to be a part of it. It all depends on me.
That really helps me a lot. I think that's that helps me to understand a lot more. I hadn't thought about it from the, especially a corporate kind of view or that kind of thing. Please bring that up again, because we're going to talk about how or why does a person with a family overwork and the pressure,
that's
that kind of pressure.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, you're asking what qualifies overworking?
Yeah.
There's so many factors.
What she thinks qualifies as overworking is not what his boss thinks qualifies as overworking.
And really the focus here is getting a balance is what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely. We're going to get to the solutions for that. Okay. So what happens when the two of you don't really agree on whether or not it's true that he is overworking? Yeah. Because all of us are struggling right now, especially with the pandemic, especially with everybody working from home, so many of us working from home, that the life work balance kind of thing is harder and harder because it's harder and harder to leave it at the office.
Yeah, totally.
Especially if you're home, right?
Yeah, there is no office.
Yeah, when there is no office.
Your office is your home.
And anybody can reach you now at any time from anywhere. Do you remember years ago when that was supposed to be our special anniversary day or something like that. And we lived in Orlando and we went to SeaWorld.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is how long ago this was. Cell phones were brand new. And it was this big, honky.
Yeah.
You know,
the
you
old Motorola flip phone.
You kind of had to carry it. You didn't really put it in your pocket even, I remember.
Yeah.
And people asked me afterwards, you know, how was your day at SeaWorld? And I said, oh, it was just great. Me, Delanus, cell phone. And you were on that cell phone all day while we were supposed to be having fun.
You know,
were working.
I don't remember that.
Oh, holy cow. I'll never forget. I'm just standing there looking at the dolphins. Do, 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 do. Well, you're off in the corner.
How many times can you watch the Shamu story or show? So.
It's so romantic.
That's right. But yeah, here we are all these years later. You know, what would happen if I wasn't on that phone all night?
I think you took me to a luau that night at SeaWorld.
Ah.
That was probably also a mistake because the girls, you remember the dancing girls?
Oh, yeah, I remember the dancing girls.
And their 3 yards of material.
You find something in a blindfolded cat.
Especially those Tahiti girls, you know, the hips. Oh, well, we're totally off.
And the coconuts, yeah.
We are. Sorry, everybody. Little tangent. Maybe we will edit that out. Okay, so are you ready for this? If the accused workaholic is listening, wink, wink, wife, you might ask him if he wants to listen to this podcast. Here is a sort of self-evaluation.
As in the, you might be a redneck if, this is the Jeff Foxworthy.
You might be a workaholic.
Might be a workaholic.
That's
if.
So good. Okay. You might be a workaholic if. Ready?
Okay.
Help me.
Is there a scoring here?
Listen, I gave you the list right there.
Do I score myself here on?
No, you don't have to take it unless you want.
That's all right.
Work is your number one priority. This is a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
You miss out on life events for work.
Mm-hmm.
You are financially stable, yet work excessively anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Your family complains that you work too much. Okay, so a check mark on any of these, right? Red flag. You try to find ways to make more time for work. Being unable to work seriously stresses you out.
Oh, yeah.
I think that kind of, that day at SeaWorld was a little stressful for you.
It certainly was.
Missing work due to illness or injury puts you in a panic.
Yeah, yeah.
Hobbies and leisure are sacrificed due to work. You may be a workaholic if the amount you work has impacted your health.
Yeah, you see that way too often.
You find a way to work even if you're sick or injured. Reminds me of my brother with his broken leg.
Yeah.
He's working away. Surgery one day and he's right back to work the next day. You rarely take vacations. And if you do, you still work while out of the office.
Take your cell phone.
Or you may go to SeaWorld. You always bring home work home with you, always. You find it hard to be in the moment because why? You are thinking about work.
You know what happened about 15 years ago?
Yeah.
We had the introduction of this thing we call the cloud in technology, right?
Yes.
And everything we do is on the internet, right? And now everybody can work from home and they've got Zoom.
Right.
All these things to do it. Well, it started about 15 years ago. And give or take. But the conversation in the technology sector turned from work is going to be, and now work is not a place that you go, but a thing you do.
Oh.
And technology has really enabled the ability to work anywhere.
Anytime.
Anytime. So
global.
Right, right. So me on a cell phone in SeaWorld was one, you know, that changes, that the whole idea of a cell phone changed how we do things. And now what has happened with the accessibility of the technology is that it's always there. It's just always available. You can do anything on your phone. Virtually,
your career,
you can do it at the computer.
Your career was spent global. Right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you had to be available around the clock.
Oh, yeah. Many midnight, 2 a.m.
Exactly.
meetings with other people around the world. Yeah.
All right. You may be a workaholic if you're working around the clock.
But yeah, the last 15 years has programmed people.
So wait a minute. So the idea of saying I'm going to work is sort of moot anymore.
That's right.
I'm doing work.
Now, certainly there's lots of situations still where people get in a car and they commute and they go to a place. They have
they might
to be
do that,
there.
But even if they come home, they still could be working.
Yeah. But a lot of people are in that mode of, I can do all this. I have access. I can log into my whatever from wherever. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes more of a, this
lifestyle.
Is who I am. Right. Yeah.
And who I am.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Very
it's not
good.
Where I go. It's what I do.
Well, you may be a workaholic if I have another measuring stick. And this is from my point of view as a relationship or a marriage mentor coach is this. If I were a mouse in the corner of your bedroom or kitchen, would I see any of this? Number one, would I see angry outbursts over little things? Little incidences, right? As a result of guilt. the overworking person.
Yeah,
feeling,
you're talking about specific. I mean, there's a lot of
the accused workaholic feeling guilty, and only he could answer that question. Only he knows why he's. Maybe he hasn't even thought about why, but he's feeling guilty. Or here's this: your partner expresses her feelings about you working too much, and what do? You meet her with hostility and anger instead of concern and sympathy. That's you may be a workaholic, right? You're being too defensive. And here's another one. You're acting entitled. Now, Dale, honestly, I feel like I've done that a little bit because I can get really focused and work really too much.
Yes, you do.
And sometimes I do feel like sometimes I act a little entitled, like, hey.
Kids, I'm working here.
Kids, bring me my whatever. You know, somebody help me out here. So if
bring
you,
me the head of a pig. Yeah. That's right.
I can't go downstairs and make myself a peanut butter sandwich. Would someone please make me a peanut butter sandwich? Right. So you're acting entitled. You're expecting your spouse or you're even your kids to cater to your needs because you're so importantly busy, right? You're urgently working all the time. And there's a sense of entitlement, like I'm pulling my weight for this family.
Well, and there's a sense of overvaluing your position or yourself, right?
Yeah, and what you're contributing.
It's a big part of corporate world where this is not, and whether you might be in a vice president or a big executive position where, you know, this isn't going to happen unless I do it, right?
Oh, right. You know. You start feeling sort of indispensable.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. That's dangerous for anybody.
Yeah.
So here's a great quote from Brian Robinson, PhD, a psychologist in Asheville, North Carolina, and author of the book, #chill. And he says, a workaholic is someone who is on the ski slopes dreaming about being back in the office. A healthy worker is someone in the office who dreams about being on the ski slopes.
Yeah.
Whoa, that sums it up. So you know what? Sometimes there are temporary situations or fix somehow that needs to be managed financially or I don't know, whatever. It's a goal that both husband and wife agree on. And, you know, he's going to go at it. She understands that. That's a hard worker. But if he's working during what's supposed to be downtime or family time or couple time, that's a workaholic.
And this is nothing new to relationships, right? I mean, I grew up this way. My father, really was a workaholic. And when I was about 10 years old when we moved, my dad finally got the job that he's been looking for, right? The opportunity, really, that he had. And that's all he did. And that was my early teenage years where he wasn't available. And, you know, I wanted to do all these different things. It was really, really difficult. I still remember getting tickets to a Houston Astros baseball game. I'm like 12 or 11 or something.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't take me. He couldn't take me for some reason. I don't remember why, but, and so there,
ouch.
We got another man, a friend to take me.
Double out.
Yeah. And so I remember these things, still all these years later. And, you know, my point is that it's common. It's really, really common for guys, especially to feel like, you know, that they have this expectation or they have to get to this level or whatever, this goal.
Okay, but where's this pressure coming from?
Well, I think that the pressure comes from within, first of all, of being successful, whatever the definition of successful is.
And don't you think there are a lot of people, and we're talking about men now, but people who just have a really high energy level. They're high achievers.
Yeah. You know? Definitely. And those are the people that end up in the positions that have a lot of responsibilities, right? Or the boss is on you to achieve. Or they're in a startup. They're in a small company where you've got to do a zillion things, right?
Okay.
You know, there's pressure to have better things, you know, than your neighbors or whatever.
Right.
But I think
or to do the things like our literary was talking about, pay off the house or get out of debt or whatever.
I think that's probably the number one thing, a rationalization that a guy's going to say is, I'm doing this for you, for us. We're going to pay off the house. We're going to be financially stable by the time I'm 34 or 35 or whatever the number is. And that's all honorable.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
They're honorable reasons.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's the short term for the long term of giving up. And, you know, I still remember the fact that my dad wasn't around.
Right.
In a very important time.
So other than relationships being impacted with maybe a child, a son, a daughter, yeah, or your right. wife. Now let's talk about that. How could relationships be impacted? What are the dangers? You know, I teach women that they're the keeper of the relationship, mm-hmm, meaning mm-hmm. lots of women are like, why should I have to do more than my fair share? And I'm like, listen, I give a lot more detailed explanation in the Wife Savers course and community. But basically, women are very relationship oriented, and therefore they're very in tune. And if they feel, they should trust their instincts, right? They should trust their womanly intuition. Mm-hmm, and if they feel like, we're going in the wrong direction here, we're tipping in the wrong way,
red flags,
there is danger ahead, then, you know, she should find a way to find the solution. And she's probably right. So let's talk about what those dangers are.
So are you saying then it's not necessarily just her responsibility to bring it up, but to help find a solution?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. We're going to talk about that.
Okay. Because don't you think that in a lot of relationships in this situation, the woman may, because, and we're in this position, he and she, right?
Right.
That he's working too much. You figure it out. Yeah. You solve it. Right. Stop it right now.
No. This is a challenge for both of them.
Okay.
They are both stressed,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and they're both contributing to the
right,
issue.
Right, sure.
That's for sure. So they're both going to have to contribute to the solution. So we'll get to that. But here are some of the dangers. Three things: divorce, infidelity, or health crisis.
Mm.
Why divorce? You know what Forbes said? On average, couples in which one partner is a workaholic divorce at twice the average rate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and also I think studies have shown over the years that finances are one of the biggest stressors to a relationship.
Oh, interesting.
And
but do you know
that's associated, right?
You might think that's not having enough money when you say finances. But I'm telling you, I have a number of mentees and coaches that I work very personally with where there's tons of money. And that's the issue.
Yeah, it's so very, very true.
So it can go both ways.
It's money regardless. Yeah.
So again, I bring up the idea of entitlement. If that kind of sense of entitlement or the idea of you're not supporting me when she brings up you're you know, it's the George and Dot from Sunday in the Park with George. You're going to have more and more angry outbursts and understanding. That's going to take a real toll on the marriage. And what really is going on from the woman's point of view is a workaholic husband is putting her emotional needs in the back seat. There's this, you can't do that and not lose some genuine connection and intimacy.
Yeah. Well, right? And I think the aspect of intimacy and sex gets all twisted up because when you don't have that relationship centered, right? If there's this type of real stress that's going on, and especially from a guy's point of view, then the physical relationship becomes very selfish and self-oriented.
You mean like just for his pleasure?
Yeah, just for my sake, right?
Because you're not tuned into her emotional needs.
Exactly.
Because you don't even know what they are because you haven't had the time to find out.
Right, 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 right.
Wow.
So, you know, you think about that doesn't get sustained, right? You can't sustain that in a relationship.
She's going to be super unhappy.
Right,
right. All right. So the bottom line is if you're the workaholic, if you're listening, you're not nurturing your partner or your partnership. Mm-hmm. You're not nurturing your marriage. And it's pretty basic. Loved ones, especially these really primary loved ones, your children, your wife, there's no way around it. They require steady, consistent, everyday nurturing, just like a garden, for heaven's sakes. Our daughter Hannah's got a beautiful garden going, and she was out of town for just a few days. She came back. That thing was so withered because she hadn't been watering it.
I got to make a disclaimer here. You have to understand, she's in Florida anything grows all year long. So
except when it's really hot for a while.
Well, you still grow stuff. Although, you know, half the country has gone through this big
spell.
It was freezing there. It was 45 degrees. So. But yeah, she has worked so hard in that. It's been really fun to watch.
And a marriage isn't any different from that.
No, that's very true.
Okay, so we talked about divorce. The other danger was infidelity. Now, this is super interesting. This is a quote by Mark Borg, Jr., PhD, psychologist and co-author of The Relationship Sanity.
Wait a minute. Is he a junior PhD? Is it Mark Borg, junior PhD?
I'd like one of those.
Yeah. I could qualify for that. Yeah. So it's Mark Borg, Jr., PhD. Okay,
that's
just want to clarify that. I'm a junior
and
PhD.
He wrote Creating and Maintaining Healthy Relationships. Now, when we talk about infidelity, listen to this. He says, the emotional wounds created by one partner seemingly choosing work over the other is similar to them sleeping with a different partner.
Really?
The emotional wounds that are created in your spouse, when that spouse feels like you are choosing work over them consistently, it's the same emotional wounds. You might as well be having an affair.
It becomes the guy's mistress, right?
That's what it feels like to her.
Yeah, that analogy has been used. But to the point we made just a few minutes ago about, you know, sex becomes very, very selfish and in self-pleasure and that's it. You can see that evolution.
And a way to relieve pressure.
Right. That's all it is, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see the evolution to the point of...
Yeah, where you feel like...
Yeah, it's not me.
Where's the other woman?
Yeah.
The other woman has the name of your company or corporation.
Whatever, right.
But also excessive time at work or with work associates of the opposite sex can obviously lead to emotional bonding and a physical relationship.
Yeah, sure.
And on the other side, the more neglected partner is going to suffer extreme loneliness, sense of neglect, and abandonment. And that can leave her or him, if we flip it, susceptible to bonding with somebody on the outside, right?
Who's
how many jokes about
sympathetic
that?
Sympathetic as opposed to
demanding. Who'll actually listen to her.
Right,
exactly. So we've got divorce. We've got, we hope we've scared the living daylights out of you. infidelity, but there's one more and it's health, right?
Oh, there was a, I wish I could remember though. Just recently there was a CEO of a large corporation who just said, I'm killing myself. Yeah, I'm done. I said, I can't do
this
anymore.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
Listen to this. This is psychologist Brian Robinson, PhD, not a junior PhD.
Not a junior. This guy's full blown. So listen to this guy.
Yeah, listen to this guy.
Okay.
He says, the research is overwhelming. In my mind, there's no question that work addiction, that's something we haven't called
work
it yet.
Addiction.
Work addiction is a compulsive disorder.
Mm, that's interesting.
Listen to this. It kills people, period.
Yeah.
In Japan, they have a name for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Karoshi. K-A-R-O-S-I. It means death from overwork. A true workaholic gets high from the adrenaline and cortisol, and without work, they go through withdrawal.
Mm. So it's a physiological thing. To be fed. It's a physiological monster to be fed by
the
doing of it.
The adrenaline.
And Japan, I've been to Japan a number of times. Incredible how much they work. And then what they do, at the end of the day, they go drink for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And their time spent at home is really, really,
really
limited.
Really minimal. The family relationships
it's really tough.
Are really
but,
tenuous.
yeah, interesting that they analogize it with something that means dying.
Dying. Death from overwork.
Yeah. Wow.
So we're talking about stroke, heart disease, mental health problems, diabetes, heart rhythms.
Yeah, all sorts
of blah, blah, blah. You know what? You know who Ben Horowitz is?
Ben Horowitz, yeah. Very famous business
He's a big
guy.
CEO.
Yeah.
Yep. And he wrote the book, The Hard Things About Hard Things.
The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
That's it. The Hard Thing About Hard Things. That's what it was. And he was in the thick of a startup where he was expecting all his people to spend just incredible amounts of time and energy and resources on getting that startup going, right? And he just threw his whole self into it, and he's expecting everyone else to as well, obviously. But he said one day that his father came over for a visit, and so they went out for a drive. It was really hot that day, and their air conditioning wasn't working. Just to set the scene, it was an uncomfortable date and an uncomfortable conversation that followed because, I'm going to read this part, my father turned to me and said, "Son, do you know what's cheap?" Since I had absolutely no idea what he was talking about, Ben says, I replied, "No, what?" "Flowers. Flowers are really cheap. Do you know what's expensive?" he asked. Again, I replied, this is Ben. Again, I replied, "No, what?" He said, "Divorce."
Yes.
Something about that joke, he says, which was not really a joke, made me realize that I had run out of time. Up until that point, I had not really made any serious choices. I felt like I had unlimited bandwidth and could do everything in my life that I wanted to do simultaneously.
Yeah.
But his joke made it suddenly clear that by continuing on the course I was on, I might lose my family.
Yeah, it's, you know, and flowers, you know, from an analogy standpoint, what does that really, really mean? It's attention, it's effort, it's focus, you know, it's the giving that situation.
He really came into his own at that point. He realized that he had been putting his needs first or his desires first above everyone else in the family. And he suddenly realized, listen, if I'm going to be part of a family or part of a group, I can't think like that.
Yeah. And it's
destructive.
This balance, it's an interesting challenge for guys because if what I do is who I am.
All right.
Okay.
Right.
If we agree on that.
Right.
Then how do I balance that with this other thing that I'm supposed to be involved with, but I'm really doing it for this other thing, so I need to come over here and I need to do this.
What Ben Horowitz went through, if you read the whole book, was he had to really expand his concept of self. All right? So yes, he was his
not
work.
Not so narrowly defined themselves.
But he's more than that. He's a husband.
Yes.
Right. He's a father, and he can take great satisfaction and joy and pride in those accomplishments.
Yes, right.
Those pursuits take just as much hard work and energy and concentration and thought process and problem solving as does being a CEO or corporate work bee, whatever.
Yep.
Right? And you can take more, and as you well know, at your stage of life, in the end, which one brings you more joy?
Oh, yeah. And which one lasts longer and has longer impact?
Which one is going to make you feel like a success at age 65?
That's right. Yeah.
Your resume, if you're all alone, the family left you years ago or you left them.
No. Yeah. Very, very true.
Okay. Very so true. That's too depressing. Let's talk about solutions. All right. So here, ladies and here, gentlemen, are some solutions. The first I'm going to tell the wife or the neglected partner what not to do. Do not turn into what we call in Wife Savers, the crazy lady. The crazy lady that is just wants to connect, but ends up actually pushing her partner away by making behavioral choices that are not helpful to the situation.
And wouldn't you say that a lot of these choices are easier and a default for a lot of women.
Yeah. And a lot are born out of just plain ignorance. And she doesn't know any other way to manage. So for instance, crazy lady ashamedly might accuse him of not being loving or attentive enough or supportive enough, or she sends him messages that his fathering's not adequate. You know, she's just undercutting him all the time.
Okay, so you're saying ashamedly. Somebody listening may not understand what ashamedly is.
It's our crazy lady ashamedly makes him feel ashamed.
Okay, cool.
Right, by sending the message that you're disappointing, you're inadequate, you're sort of ridiculous or whatever. And then we have another. We have several crazy ladies, but here's another one that really applies. Depressa. She makes him feel depressed because she's just whining and complaining all the time. She She frames all of his responsibilities outside of the relationship as her competition. You know, she overlooks the importance of his work. She downplays his worries. She begrudges him the space or time he needs to recharge, that kind of thing. She uses silence, you know, blah, blah, blah. There's a long list of things that she can do all wrong. But what she is conveying to him, what he's sensing from her over and over, is that he's a failure. You don't meet my needs, is what she's saying. You don't care enough. You don't matter as much. I don't matter as much as you do and everything.
Then it becomes a battle over the two things, right?
That can all be true, but the way she's approaching it is not constructive,
right?
It's not productive. So we don't want to break down the door like a SWAT team when we're trying to get into his heart. We're going to do
put your hands on the edge, step away from the laptop.
Yeah. We can come in the back door and get a lot more done. So anyway, so now let's talk about what to do, right? Disclaimer here, counseling may be necessary. Just listening to this podcast might not solve your problem. But even, you know, I have heard from students who even had one counseling session, just one, where the counselor said to the husband, "You work too much." And just being in the counselor's office helped him realize the gravity of the situation.
Yeah,
kind of
right.
like Ben Horowitz's conversation with his dad when he said, you know what's cheap and you know what's expensive.
Well, I remember getting dragged into the principal's office. That was my problem throughout school. Yeah, that's right.
I don't recommend that.
I had a lot of experience with that.
I really don't recommend the threat of the counselor. No. That's kind of... Let's try these other solutions first, okay? So if you're going to approach this topic with your spouse, wife, please do it with caution, understanding, and compassion. And just remember that you're both stressed. Mm-hmm. You're both stressed. All right. First thing I recommend is that you study Wife Savers principles. You need to be in the Wife Savers course and community where you're really going to learn your stuff. Second of all, you need to take care of yourself. And if you don't know how to do that, which most women are really bad at, frankly, you need to be in the Wife Savers course community.
That's such a focus of what you teach.
Oh, such a focus.
At the forefront of everything, which I think surprises people sometimes, right?
Yeah, it does. You know? It definitely
does. Just tell me what to tell my husband. Just tell me, give me the words.
Stop.
Wait, let me write that down.
What have you been doing for you lately, right? Because you have to have that full sense of self. You have to have the strong body, the strong mind and everything in order to give with abundance and receive with confidence and to express yourself and your needs with confidence. If you come from a really super hyper needy point of view, all he's going to hear is panic and desperation, and that just pushes him away. So you need to take care of yourself. Here's an interesting approach too that I've become aware of is, you know, stop enabling him.
How so? Enabling?
Well, like you hold up dinner for him night after night.
Oh, yeah. Right? We don't start on time.
You're waiting for dad. You're delaying the family needs. You're postponing activities. You're keeping the kids up late so that he can see him. You're enabling the workaholic. Mm. If it's a temporary thing, of course. But if this is the default and you really know you're going down the wrong road, you enable him.
But is it...
You don't put your life on hold or the kids' life on
hold.
You
just said something that we really haven't touched on a little bit, but there are these situations where it is a temporary thing, you know, where we've been apart, where I went to look for work or whatever.
Then definitely you would.
Yeah, you have to understand.
You would lean towards accommodation.
The ground rules.
Yes,
right?
And you both agreed to it.
Right. But if things just kind of evolve into where it's like, where's dad?
I think we've set that pretty clear. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
That kind of extreme. So we're just letting him live the natural consequences of being away from the family so much. And in that line, in that way of thinking, you want to share with him what he's missed in a positive way.
In a positive way. Not that you're
blaming him.
Blaming him or hurting him.
Yes.
You know.
But you're saying, oh, we had such a good time tonight. We did this, we did that. Didn't make him, understand there was a really happy thing that happened here or a good thing that happened here that, yeah, you missed it, bud. Right? And obviously, you're going to invite or offer activities that you know he enjoys. He needs recreational companionship with you, and he can enjoy it with the family, too. So if you can get him into that setting and get him into doing something kind of just fun and recreational with you or the family, there's a lot better chance of having a productive conversation about this topic. And that's where we're heading now. We're going to have this conversation. So when you communicate about this, once you're in an actual conversation about it, remember, you're always working kind of argument just go repeats. If that's your approach, you're always working. You're working
that's
too
right.
much.
You're right. I am always working. I have to do this.
That's if
right.
you're just spinning your wheels and like the letter writer, that's what she said, that they've talked about it over and over and over. That just means there are unmet needs on both sides. And you're not really addressing those needs. You're just expecting him to take your word for it that he's working too much and that he's supposed to now do this do less whatever. You just got to take the time now, if you really want to solve this problem, and unravel why. Why does he think he needs to work so much, right? So that's number one. You want to have that conversation. And remember, compassion and
You make the other point that if you can build it into the environment that's not so supercharged and at the end of the day and he just got home and it's connected to the aspect that he's working and all that stuff.
Yes. It would be really great to come on the heels of some recreational activity where everybody's more relaxed. Exactly. So that was number one. So try to unravel why he's feeling he has to work so much. Number two is to evaluate together if an update is needed.
Yeah, I might be working on old information.
Yes. For instance, I had a student who they got into the, we're in college mode. We got to bust through the next couple of years, you know, and or law school or whatever. Yeah, and she's like, okay, I get it. I'm a wife of a law school student. And so they get into that kind of lifestyle mode of thinking. And then he graduates and then he actually goes to work, but they're still in the law school mode.
Yeah, right.
So you get what I mean.
Yeah, you've got to review every once in a while.
Number three is agree on very specific actions. All right, so here's some of, together now we're going to agree on how are we going to solve this?
I like that because too much of it is, you're working too much, I need you home, and then, you know, blah, 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 and then it becomes this general situation of
just
blaming back and forth.
It's just complaining. It's not
complaining. So putting something specific around goals or things like that.
Right. Yeah. So she can suggest these things. And maybe he's listened to this episode of the Wife Series podcast, and now you can talk about it together. So here's just some suggestions, right, for what you might agree on. Obviously, like you agree on date nights. Yes, we're going to have date nights and not 1 hour.
Yeah. Trust me, an hour date night doesn't work. I've tried it.
It needs to be by the consummate marriage expert guru of all time. Right? John Gottman, the date night's got to be at least 2 hours. Or couples lunch. Maybe you're going to have couples lunch once a week. Maybe you're going to have a weekend breakfast together. That kind of thing. Whatever it is, it's exclusive one-on-one time. Exclusive. Then if you don't know about this, you really need to go back and listen to previous podcast episodes here because we talk a lot about those five golden hours that Gottman talks about. The 5 minutes of touching base about your day in the morning, the 20 minutes of debriefing together at night, 5 minutes of little expressions of appreciation and approval throughout the day, and maybe another 5 minutes of admiration throughout the day. And then that 2-hour date night or couple's lunch or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. That all adds up to 5 hours a week. And that is, oh my gosh, that is a minimum that a relationship requires. But his research shows that successful couples last for decades on those 5 hours. I have other experts, though, who talk more about 15 hours.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right? And I think that even if you can agree on the 5 minutes and the 20 minutes as a starting point of the, okay, what's it going to be like today? Where are you going to be? What's going to happen? Okay, good. That you're really coming back to the mothership, if you will.
Ooh, I like that.
Every once in a while on a scheduled basis is going to make.
Home base.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That, and it's reassuring. It's reassuring that, you know, I'm here for you. That's what she needs.
Right.
That's what she needs. I'm here for you.
And I think, let me just add that from a guy's perspective, that is a responsibility, is what I've learned, that you have to take on and not get in the attitude of, I'm working for you. I'm doing all this stuff for you. We're going to be, you know, in a few years, it's all going to be fine. We're all going
to
be independently.
Which gives me permission to neglect you.
Exactly. And we're going to be independently wealthy or whatever, you know, whatever the goal is. That doesn't preclude you from having that responsibility to the touch base and to home plate and be grounded and all those things.
And to be prioritizing her emotional needs
Her needs. Exactly.
Ah, very good.
Comes with the territory.
Here's another suggestion that you can agree on. Scheduling physical intimacy.
Put it on the calendar.
Yeah. And we have a whole course about physical intimacy called Conversations on Physical Intimacy for Wives and Their Husbands. Go to wivesavers.org and hit the tab up in the corner that says Conversations. And you want that course. It's for husbands and wives. He can listen to it while he's hi-ho, hi-ho on his way to work in the car. And then you can talk about it later. Learn about it. Please go to wivesavers.org, Conversations. But scheduling physical intimacy, it does not take the romance out of it.
Yeah,
it gives lots of fun and anticipation.
I think that, there's an attitude that, you know, No. That's just turned it into a job. It's another responsibility.
Yeah. Any other way during the time you're raising a family is...
It's hard.
It's fantasy. Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Fantasy. Wait a minute.
Here's another fun thing to do is you kind of agree that the minute you're together again, that reunion time, wherever it comes or whether it's at home or somewhere else or whatever time of day, that... you immediately embrace physically.
Oh, you physically, not just...
When you reunite, you
How was your
embrace.
Day? Fine.
Yeah. Right. No, you touch. Physically embrace and emotionally, immediately, you spend a few minutes together.
Well, and that goes to your five-hour thing, right? That's that 20-minute debrief type stuff.
20-minute debrief could be at 8:30 at night.
Yeah, but so you're talking about...
He gets home at 7:30.
That moment.
That 7:30 moment is really important. Okay. There should also be routine, non-negotiable family time. Whatever that is.
Like scheduling your
Saturday
sex.
Morning.
It's gotta be done.
Yes. And it's just non-negotiable. Like, no, this is sacred. Saturday mornings or Monday nights or whatever it is. Another idea is to share your calendars like you and I do. Mm-hmm. I know what your schedule is because you share your calendar with me. It really helps the spouse to feel part of your life and a part of what you're doing.
That I agree with that, but that could be in a situation in a stage of work could be really overwhelming to a
wife.
Well,
it doesn't mean that it goes onto her calendar, but that she has access
she understands
to his calendar if she needs to. Like, I really need to talk to him right now, but I wonder if he's in a meeting. Let me look.
Yeah. And maybe as a couple, you decide that ethereal, he's at work, that's all I know, is not enough, right?
Yeah.
I need to have a little
more
tangible understanding. And that's something that, you know, you talk about and work out.
I really love that you've always done that for me. You tell me what happened in the meeting. You tell me what your day is going to be like. And I've never felt like I was in the dark that way.
So,
I totally understood what you were doing.
And do you think that when I was being a workaholic, that helped the situation?
I don't ever think you were a workaholic.
Well,
I know you're on your cell phone. There were times.
No. Seriously, though, do you think that knowing that makes it easier?
I never felt shut out, Del.
Okay.
I never felt
shut out. So the answer to the question is yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, remember the week that it was my birthday week and you were somewhere over, that happened a lot, actually. You were in some other part of the world, but that week you sent me flowers every single day for a week.
That was making up for all the years prior.
Yeah,
is what that was,
I never felt neglected too bad. That's right. All right. So, you know, she needs to be careful how she presents all of these ideas that in a very, very positive light. Like, I love having fun on our date nights. You know, reinforce when you do, when he does give you the couple hours, you know, whatever. Be very positive in your reinforcement. All right. Mm-hmm. Like, explain to him how much you appreciate Amara's work and that you know it's all for you. But it would make me really happy if we spent more time together and hear some of the ways that I thought maybe we could do that, right? And she must be very specific. Like you said, just complaining, you work too much. Not being specific, like here's some ideas, here's some solutions. Yeah, take some of these. And if he says that he
take some of these,
some of these suggestions.
Oh, it sounds like you're handing out some pills. So take some of these. It'll solve all your problems right here.
That'd be nice. I wish I had a pill for all the problems.
Exactly. Where do I get
marriage?
More of those? Exactly.
And if he says, you know, she says, here's some suggestions. And he says, I can't do that. What's she supposed to say? She's supposed to say, well, what can you do?
Yeah.
You know, there's a little negotiation.
That's right.
You got to have some wiggle room here. Right. Okay. Now, this is my next to last suggestion. Agree on very specific boundaries that will help draw the line between work and home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, no cell phones when you're at SeaWorld.
Yeah. It's what?
No, sorry. No cell phones at dinner.
No, I can use them at Disney, but not at SeaWorld. Okay. I'll remember that.
At
dinner. That's a common one.
I'm not saying you have to do this.
No, it's
listener.
Just ideas.
These are just ideas that you can come up with together, right? For instance, no cell phone at dinner, no use of the master bedroom as a home office, asking him to please decompress before he walks in with the family. Don't work right up the minute you pull into the driveway. Or
don't take it out on the family.
Right. Listen to
music. That's really...
Or let him... Ask him to create a little border between, a buffer zone.
A barrier, whatever, right?
A buffer zone.
A DMZ, a demilitarized zone.
Yes, so that when he comes home, he's feeling a little more pleasant. And he's not thinking about work so much. Ask him to please avoid multitasking. Don't, you know, focus on one thing. You're here with the family. Focus on us. That could go along with turning off your phone and that kind of stuff. I remember I had to draw these lines with you. Do you remember that? Where I'd say, honey,
you can't
answer the phone at dinner. Right.
And for some people, you know, if they're an ER physician on call or something, you got to understand there are those things. But those are very unique situations that you sit down and you figure out what the boundaries are.
Yes, that's all we're asking.
Right.
Agree on specific boundaries that will help draw the line between work and home. And last of all, I'll commit to regular reviews or checkups. You kind of talked about
alluded.
That.
No, things change.
Right.
Things just definitely change. And if you're in that mode of talking about the job or the work or where everything fits in together, it's easy to do.
Right.
To have those on a periodic basis. For some people, it may be yearly, and some others it might be on a much more frequent basis.
So whenever you have those conversations, what we're really aiming for is respect.
Mm.
Can you sing that song?
Not like Aretha can, but it's one of my top five.
I was like, R-E-S-E.
Okay, your trouble is you can't spell respect.
I can't spell. That's right. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. That's hard to say, let alone sing. All right. So you're looking for respect. We're getting away from the gimme gimme or the wishful kind of thinking. We're trying to be a little more empathetic. And whenever you're trying to get in the empathetic mode, you got to think, what is my part in all of this?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know you've got workable solutions if he walks out of that conversation feeling respected in that his righteous motivations are acknowledged, his sacrifices are appreciated, his achievements are approved. He feels your approval for what he's achieved.
Yeah, yeah.
And his need to work is reasonably accommodated. All right. He's going to feel respected.
Yeah, you can't make work the bad guy.
Right.
Overall, right.
And the conversation is successful and you have workable solutions if, after that conversation, she, or maybe multiple conversations, I should say, she is feeling more respected. See, she has been feeling disrespected. Mm-hmm, like he's prioritizing everything but her.
Right.
So she's feeling more respected. She's feeling like her instincts are validated. Her thoughts are valued. Her sacrifices are honored.
Right.
And her needs are being recognized and met, that he's making a reasonable effort to recognize, honor, and meet her needs. And that way, you'll be able to stick with those agreed upon solutions. And it will also strengthen and immunize you against any kind of setback, because there are going to be setbacks. There are going to be the occasional late nights. Work is never going away. It's still going to pop up, but in the future, she's going to be able to accommodate that better. She's not going to panic. She's not going to be filled with self-pity or disappointment, all of that. Instead, she can respond with a little more security, a little more confidence, a little more empathy, and he can respond with a little more flexibility and
I think
humility and understanding.
But if you can get to that point where the ground rules are understood and abided by, is that a word?
Right.
Abided by, dealt with, agreed upon, done.
Yes.
Then when
the
outliers come up and the unique things come up, it's so much easier to work with. And it's not this fear thing that just, you know, is always going to be there and telling yourself stories about what's going on.
Because guess what? His work becomes your work.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah.
And her home life or her career becomes his. Listen, that is what marriage is all about. Thanks for listening to the Wife Savers podcast. We'd love you to join the Wife Savers course and community. It's there that I can really teach you how to develop more mutual, meaningful, compassionate ways of interrelating and communicating. How to develop more intimacy, including how to spend more meaningful time together, and how to build a truly equal, fully vested, lifelong romantic partnership. Learn more at wifesavers.org. Home is with